The first paper contains three questions. What is the white ball thing with the brown stuff in the middle? I don't know what you mean. Huh? Oh. Very good expression of the language. A white ball, we call a bun, a white ball thing a bun, I guess. A white ball thing, which we call a bun, with the brown stuff in the middle, we call it the, what do you call it? We call it the lotus seed paste. So, what is this? This is for you to eat. You don't enjoy it. Why don't you eat it up? It's good for you. It's a dessert. It's a sweet dessert for you. So, next question. That's an easy question, though. Why do we use both hands to eat? I like to use one hand. Why do I have to use both hands? See, if you are using one hand to eat, where do you put the other? All right, assuming you put the other on the table or underneath the table, but why not use both hands? Plus, if you just use just one hand, you pick up your fork and you put your fork onto the food, how do we eat it? You tend to move your body like that, do you? Like that, right? Why do you shake your body all the time when you're eating? You know, I'm watching everybody by the side. That's why I'm sitting in here. You mean I sit here for no reason? I sit here just to watch you, to make sure that you observed. So, if I'm sitting in here and you are starting to move like that, it looks absolutely funny. And I know a lot of table manners in different cultures. They don't do that. The British, the French, the Italian, they have excellent table manners. They don't eat when they're moving body like that. No, absolutely not. Certainly the Chinese have good table manners too. So why don't we observe all these table manners? Why don't we eat with both hands? Third question. Why is there a video camera? What is it for? Well, the video camera is not to watch you, though. It's me to watch you, and that is watching me. So it makes sure that I observe, I obey, I behave. And other than that, I have to give a speech, I have to answer questions, though that camera is to put me in my position. I got to watch out for every word I say. So that's the reason for the camera in there. That's an easy question. Nothing spiritual. How does one assist, or what is one's responsibility to assist a friend who is in need? For example, dying of cancer or being rejected by others. All will suffer. So all will suffer, so how does one assist the person's suffering? That's a good question. How do we assist people who are suffering? Well, in order to assist people who are suffering, we have to know what is suffering. If you start to pursue something spiritual and you don't know about suffering, you don't know about life. Life is potentially meaningful under any situation, even under situations that are most miserable. It's potentially meaningful, even under suffering. Humans have the capacity to creatively turn life's negative aspects into something positive and constructive. But you really do have to know suffering first. In Buddhism, there are the Four Noble Truths: suffering, causes of suffering, cessation of suffering, and nirvana. What is nirvana? It means just transcend suffering. You pass the suffering. So in the Four Noble Truths, when the Buddha attained nirvana under the Bodhi tree the next day, The first time when he turned the Dharma view, that means when he promotes what he believes, he promotes the Four Noble Truths to the five ascetic mendicants. And what these Four Noble Truths really have to know? If you don't know the Four Noble Truths, you really have to find out from the internet or some books. Suffering. The world, this world is full of suffering. You must know suffering. And not just knowing the suffering, you have to know the causes of suffering. Why do we have this suffering? What gives us suffering? Why do we have to subject ourselves to suffering? Why people died? Why people died of cancer? Why people died of accident? Why people died of earthquake? There's so many suffering in the world. It's an accepted fact that living is suffering. If you don't know about suffering, you don't know life. If you don't know about suffering, you should go to Haiti now and see how people suffer after earthquakes, how people roam about in the street without food, without a home. So you really have to study suffering and know suffering. Why are people unhappy? Before I get to suffering, I will get to suffering. What's the purpose of life? If you know about, to study suffering, you really have to know about the purpose of life. If I asked you, what's the purpose of life? What's the purpose of living? You should answer me. I don't know. I just want to be happy. Most people say, you ask me the purpose of life, the objective of life? I don't know. I never think about it. I just live. I just want to be happy. Do you want to be happy? Well, then I ask you, what is happiness? What is happiness? In most culture, especially North America, we all have the life objective of living to be happy. We say we want to be happy. But we don't know about suffering and we don't know about happiness. But a human being is not in pursuit of happiness, but rather in search of a reason to be happy, to live through understanding and actualizing the meaning of life. That means, how can you be happy if you don't even know about life, the meaning of life? And if you are surrounded by suffering, how can you be happy? If you know that you're going to die one day, you may say that, I don't want to think about death. It's too far away from me yet. I'm young. You're young, but many people died of young age. Do you know that? You're just avoiding the problem. I don't know about suffering. I just live. But when you are always in suffering, how can you be happy? So there's a need to search for a reason to be happy. Yeah, I'm in suffering, but I have a reason to be happy. I have a reason to be happy. Now, in order to have this reason to be happy, you really have to know the meaning of life. It's all related. All these things are related. It may not sound related to you now, but you've got to know suffering. You're going to know happiness. You're going to know the reason to be happy. The need for this, for a reason to be happy, drives us to search and understand the meaning of life. Why are you here today? Probably you are in your first step to know about the meaning of life. Once an individual's search for meaning is successful, it not only renders him happy, but also gives him the capacity to cope with suffering. In other words, if you want to help your friend about suffering, you really need to search for a meaning to live. Your friend said, I'm suffering from cancer. I don't want to live. I don't have a meaning in life. Can you help him to find a meaning in life, though? If he loses meaning in life, how can he live? You got to have this meaning to live. Basically, why are people unhappy? In the present cultures, the feeling of meaninglessness resulting from frustrations drives him to unhappiness because he didn't find any meaning. It's meaningless. Life to him, if he's suffering from cancer or from something really bad, life is meaningless to him because he's waiting for death. You got to find a meaning in it. Why do I have to live? Not just cancer. There could be some disease, that incurable disease that kids suffer at young age. At very young age, they suffer from an incurable disease. You got to find meaning for him. He got to know the meaning to live. And many people now have enough to live by, but nothing to live for. They have enough means. They won't starve. The government will provide them with relief, with, you know, all kinds of help. They have enough to live by, but they have nothing to live for. Why do I have to live? They have enough food, but they have no meaning, nothing to live for. They have the means, but no meaning. But no meaning in it. This sounds so abstruse, isn't it? How do we see this meaninglessness? We see meaninglessness every day. Do you realize it? We see meaninglessness of life every day. Can you tell me meaninglessness of life? How do people express meaninglessness of life? Can you tell me? I'll tell you. Depression, aggression, addiction. They express it this way. They express meaninglessness by depression. Why? They have no meaning and they're absolutely depressed. I'm useless. I'm useless in this life. I've nothing to live for. I've gone through, I'm now 60, I'm now 50, and I've done nothing. All my friends become rich, multimillionaires, and here I got stuck. So he started to depress himself. He depresses his image. He has no hope to live for. He has no dignity himself. Why? He's absolutely depressed. Depression is an expression of meaninglessness. He finds no meaning in life. Aggression. Just the opposite end of it. Because he finds life is meaningless, that provokes his temper. He objects everything. He refuses everything. No one is good. Nothing is good for him. He's absolutely aggressive. If something stands in his way, he'll remove it. Aggression. Criminal offenses. Hurting others. Betraying others. Addiction. He takes to drugs. I have no meaning in life. I just want to bury myself in drugs. I don't want to think about anything. Every day I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcohol. I'm drugs, LSD, all kinds of things. What does this tell you? Do you really know about them? This tells you that they don't find meaning in life. And how about for people who suffer? But then how does a human go about finding meaning? Another question comes up. If you tell me that people think that life is meaningless, how do I go about finding meaning? I want to teach me how to find meaning in life. How? There's so many approaches in finding meaning in life. And something comes up to my mind is, a biographical approach, which means that study the lives of all those people who seem to have found the answer. Study the lives of those people who seem to have found the answers in finding meaning for life. What are the lives of these people? The Buddha. The Buddha found meaning in life. The Buddha found happiness. Or even Jesus. Or even Virgin Mary. There's so many saints in finding meaning in life. Have you found it? A biographical approach. They have succeeded. They render to civilizations all kinds of benefits. They render benevolence to mankind. Even they passed away, their names still remain. Their deeds, the saintly behavior still remind us of how we should behave. A biographical approach. Right now, you're joining a temple, you're having lunch in here, you are on your way to find a biographical approach to life. I want to find out more about the Buddha's teaching. I want to learn about it. I want to find meaning in it. That's your first step. Another approach, probably, is the values approach. The meaning of life, values. Your family background. What did your dad and your mom, your parents teach you? You cannot be egoistic. You have to help others. You have to render your compassion. You have to be altruistic. I don't know, many families may not teach altruistic behavior. What is altruistic behavior? Only thinking about others, helping others, rendering compassion to others. Altruistic. Many, many people are egoistic. Can you be altruistic? Values. Can you, by looking at history, we know that many people contribute to life. Those are the values that we highly treasure as a saintly behavior. Can we learn from them? All right, this is about happiness. Let's get back to the questions. If this person is suffering, how do we help him? There are three avenues on which one arrives at the meaning of life. There are usually three ways. Even if you are in a miserable situation, you confront a fate that you cannot change. There's three ways on which you can arrive at still, there's still a meaning in it, even though something is miserable, something is, you can't change it, it's a fate, but it's still meaningful. How do you do it? The first is creating a deed or a work. So if you're miserable, okay, I want to help out. I want to help out others by creating some work. For example, I want to be a monk. By being a monk, I can promote spirituality of life to others, to help others. This is the work that I should do before I died. Or I should do a deed that would contribute to the benevolence of mankind. I don't know what kind of deeds. There's so many deeds you can do it. It's by a work, by a deed. You vow to do something. Or even by voluntary work. The second is experiencing something or encountering someone. For example, if someone, there was a man, Viktor Frankl, who was in a concentration camp, in a Jewish camp in Nazi Germany's time, and he was spending his life in a concentration camp. All these other fellows were dying in concentration camp, being tortured or a gas chamber by the Nazi. And this Viktor Frankl, who is still living, he's tried to live. Because why? Because he thinks, I got to meet my wife. I got to meet my kid. I still have to live. I live just to meet my wife in the future. There's a love bondage to it. There's a hope. So I got to live. I can't die. No matter what, I can't die. So there's another way. The third way of finding a meaning in life is very altruistic. It's very profound. And it's what the Buddha is talking about. It's what the Buddha is always promoting. One may find meaning in life in suffering itself. Suffering in itself is a growth experience. I've got cancer. Oh, I can't live. I'm suffering. But I will overcome it. My willpower to live. I cannot die. My willpower will overcome it. And I vow to do all voluntary work. I help all the others. I change my lifestyle. I'm not egoistic anymore. I'm altruistic. I go out everywhere to serve others. I have to live. Just this living power continue. This way is important and practical. When one faces a fate that one cannot change, one can learn to rise above it, grow beyond it, and by doing so, change oneself. So one may turn a personal tragedy into a triumph, into an achievement. There's so many cancer fighters. The people who are suffering from cancer, they fight. They won't just die. I want to live. Every minute of it, every minute, every day I want to live. Not just living. I live and give an example to all the others, my willpower to live. That's the meaning of life. To some people, without suffering, he would never have achieved something. Like Helen Keller. She was blind. She was deaf, mute. He couldn't speak. He couldn't hear. He couldn't see. She could only feel. She could only touch. If you were Helen Keller, what would you do? I couldn't see. I couldn't hear. I couldn't speak. I can only touch. I prefer death. There's no meaning in life anymore. But Helen Keller continued to live. She lived meaningfully every second of it. She learned. And she learned and learned until she became... She was the first blind, deaf, and mute candidate to be accepted by Radcliffe College, the forerunner of Harvard. He graduated with a degree at Harvard University. She became a philosopher, a writer. And she also contributed a lot of help to the handicapped by inventing the Braille system. Imagine, if you could not see, you cannot read, if you cannot hear, how can you attend in the lesson? You cannot speak. You cannot speak out your feeling inside. But she lived. As I said, life is potentially meaningful under any condition, even those that are most miserable. We have the capacity to creatively turn life's negative aspects into positive aspects, constructive aspects. It depends on how you see it. But you must know how to suffer, though. You're in suffering, you must know how to suffer. How do you suffer? You just faced it. And I can always imagine in the movie, Rocky, when he was accepting all these blows on the face, what did he do? He was accepting all kinds of blows into the face. He just accepted. He just said, come on, beat me up. I won't die. I will endure. I will continue. So you must know how to suffer. Face the suffering with courage and will. Do not view it with hatred, grievances, frustrations, and repulsiveness. If the blow lands on you, if you can't avoid it, just accept it, endure it, and continue for the next day. Continue to the next fight. Create a vow of accomplishment to do something or a deed in the future. Anticipate a strong wish to create something or to create a deed. So that's why in the Buddha said, make a vow. I make a vow that I would try my best to help all sentient beings in the pursuit of enlightenment. Treat your suffering experiences as a growth of courage and willpower. And turn your suffering into a growth of experiences of compassion and rendering to mankind. So I don't know, this is too long a question to answer. But this is very complicated questions. You must face suffering. So you must study suffering. And there's so much I can talk more about suffering. Did you find out the causes of suffering? Why do we have the cancer? Why do we have the disease? Probably it's because of some karma that we have created in the past that lead to this disease. So how do I tell people? You must not create bad karma. You must be improving. So in other words, you must learn the Buddha's teaching as early as possible, so that you can help out. So every time when you're in a meditation class, if you're helping out others, you are removing your karma. If you're joining and make this into a karmic energy of benevolence, of peacefulness. You're helping everybody by your participation. Your participation helps others and it helps yourself too. On the other hand, what would you have done if you have come here? You would have talked on the phone, you have to go to McDonald's, you have to be on parties and doing something else that is not creative, that's not helping others. We should be responsible for what we are doing. There's so many good deeds that we can do, and yet we ignore them. We only do egoistic things. Did you raise your hand? You want to say something?
You should know that many of the first-time comers today are part of the Timothy group, the Canadian volunteer group.
Oh.
So they are already donating their time to assist others.
That's good. So you're trying to remove suffering, not only from yourself, from others. And I've talked about half an hour on suffering. I can talk another six hours on the causes of suffering, how to stop suffering, and how do we go to the path of nirvana. So if you have a friend who's suffering from a disease, tell him to gather the courage, face it, live it up. And it's better to die right at the blow rather than depressing yourself at the corner. One blow could have put me dead. But I prefer that blow because I'm struggling to survive. I don't want to depress myself at that corner, weeping, crying, and losing my dignity. What do you think? Which one you prefer? You want to hide yourself in the corner crying and losing your dignity and lying flat, depressed? Or you want to stand up? Stand up like a man. Stand up like a human being. What do you think about God? Another question. What do you think about God? That is in Religion 101. It takes one semester to talk about it. And you expect to answer that question in a few minutes. What do you think about God? There's one course at UBC. However, what do I think about God? The God is in you, and not anywhere. God is not in heaven. No. God is in you and in me, in all sentient beings. We want to find that God. That God will come out. That God will teach us what to do. But you got to find it. You got to find the key to open that door leading you to the God inside of you. So the most significant at this juncture is not whether to find God or not. Have you got the key to the door? Today, I don't know if you've got a key or not, but you're rambling back and fro on that door. Open that door and get in. There's a lot more there. The God is in you. Not an external creator that creates the world and that is your God. Don't try to give an answer to a complicated question of creation. Who created the world? The simple answer is God. Who gives you what you are suffering today? God. Who gives you all the happiness? God. It's easy. Just rely everything on God. You don't even have to think about it. He's my master. He determines my fate. He gives me happiness. As long as I obey him, it will be okay. Even though if I'm doing good deeds, I ask for excuse. One deed, bad deed is done, I go and ask for excuse. Another bad deed, another excuse. Another. What do you call that? What is that? When you go to the room that you have confession. You ask for confession. What do you think about God? Very good question. That God is in you. How do we find it? The Buddha's teaching contains all of it. The Buddha is not God. The Buddha gives us the key to open that door. When we enter that door, we go on and go on. We'll find a God. If I understand correctly, we must let go of all desires to find peace. Is love a desire then? And if so, how do you let go of that desire? What do you do when your mind yearns for it? Love. It all depends on what you mean by love. What you mean by love is a one-sided love. A man loves a woman and a woman loves a man. And it may be a sexual desire in disguise, and you call it love. Love is only one word. Love is just one word, but it has many clothes. You put on the clothes of sexual desire, it's not love anymore. You put on the clothes of one-sided love, it's egoistic love. So it all depends on how you dressed up your love. Love is a very misleading word. People kill because of love. I like to call love compassion if love is unconditional. I'm rendering compassion to all mankind. It does not matter who you are. No differentiation, no discrimination. Like Avalokiteshvara, Kuan Yin, and Dizang, Siddhartha Bodhisattva, they render unconditional compassion to all sentient beings by helping them. And I call that compassion, is not love. Love is one-sided. If a husband loves a wife and the wife does not reciprocate the love, that becomes hatred. That winds up in a divorce. So love has to be reciprocated. You have to return it. He loves him, but he doesn't love him, her, then there will be problem. There even may be killing and struggling and fighting. And love could be very powerful. Love is like the sea. It can float a boat. It can also sink the boat. Depends on how you do it. Maternal love sometimes is great. The mom loves children unconditionally. But nowadays, some mothers, they don't even know what loving children are, what love is. How? They abandon their babies at the door of hospitals. And they don't care. They just run away from families. They leave their babies to the governments to take care. They go on to their life, living another life. Irresponsible dads to become alcoholic, to leave the family and leaving all the children behind unattended. So, depends on how you dressed up your love with.